Father, thank you so much for your kindness and for the abundance of the resources that are in your word. And I just ask that this morning your spirit would enable us to glean from this marvelous book of wisdom that you've given to us, and that that Christ would be our example, and that you would cause us to reflect your glory as we become wiser in skillful living. So guide us this morning in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, so we are in the book of Proverbs, one of my favorite books. Well, I got a lot of favorite books in the Bible, so what do you know about that? Okay, before I get started, if you guys want to get a really helpful little commentary, this is in the Tyndale series. So, Tyndale Old Testament commentary series. You can get the whole set for the Old Testament. It's you can probably get it off of CBD. I don't know, Amazon today is probably cheaper. But used to, CBD is where you get the Christian book distributors, where you get the really good discounts on whole commentary set. They also have one on the New Testament called Tyndale New Testament Commentaries. But this one I picked up when I was about 22 or 23, when I first came to Master's College. Actually, that's my first year. And I really realized that, hey, I need some wisdom because I'm a fool. And so, I got this and read through most of it in the summer between my first and second year at Master's College, and it did a huge amount of good for me. Now, if you want a tome and more information than you ever could imagine, this is by Bruce Waltke, New International Commentary of the Old Testament. But for our purposes, this one's a really good one. Actually, I get more out of this one than that one. So, there you go. Okay, we are going to look at an overview, introduction this morning for what the book of Proverbs is about. And then we're going to look at the first 7 verses of chapter 1, if I manage my time well enough. And then we're going to progress through a series of subject matters. So, for instance, next week we're going to look at the topic, the fear of the Lord. And then, I think this is the way I'm going to go, and I've already got all this listed out, and it's evolving as I go, because I made a list of how I was going to teach this, and I've already changed the order of it, and I haven't even taught one class yet. So, today we're going to look at the introduction, and then we're going to look at the fear of the Lord next week, and then we're going to do chapters 1 through 9, which is a unit, and we're going to do that in 2 weeks. And then we're going to pick up individual, so that leaves 11 more weeks. We're going to pick up individual studies. We're going to look at wisdom as a topic. So subject matter. As a matter of fact, this is a huge component of trying to study the book of Proverbs, is to divide it up into subjects, particularly when you get out of chapter 9 and start into chapters 10 through 31. For instance, turn to chapter 10 and just look at verse 1. The first verse here, the Proverbs of Solomon, a wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is a sorrow to his mother. So the first two topics are going to be wisdom and the fool. You see both of those in that one verse there. So this is 2 different weeks right here. I'm going to spend an entire lesson on wisdom itself, and then the fool, which there are over 70 Proverbs delegated to the fool. What's that say? And then the next one we're going to do after that is the tongue. I'm not going to go any further than that because I'm going to run out of space. But there are almost as many verses on the tongue in the book of Proverbs. Wonder why, right? And so then we're going to look through different subject matters. We're going to look at anger. We're going to look at righteousness. For a believer, so you have this contrast over and over again. The righteous, and then there'll be a statement, but the wicked, right? So in contrast to the wicked and the way of the righteous, the way of the wicked, and we're going to look at relationships, pride, humility, sexual sin, or human sexuality. That should be better said like that. There's a lot of Proverbs on that. But so when you think about Proverbs, that's the way that it's very helpful to realize that these are all individual Proverbs. Now, how many Proverbs do we know that Solomon wrote according to 1 Kings 6, 7, or 8, somewhere in there? Does anybody remember? Is it 1,000? I think it's like 3,000. I think that's what it is. I didn't go to look at the reference. But I think it's about 3,000 that we know of. And now there's not 3,000 in here. I think there's 940 or something like that. And so these are a portion of them that God had inspired and we have recorded for us. I gave you an outline there, and I better get to my notes or I'll ramble around in circles here. Okay, so let's introduce the book of Proverbs. Proverbs, skillful living in a broken world. Skillful living in a broken world. So the Proverbs, as they're called in chapter 1, verse 1, the Proverbs of Solomon. They are further explained in verse 6 as a saying. Okay, so what is a proverb? A proverb, a saying. They're also called the words of the wise, and they're also called riddles. So a proverbial statement has been given to us. Oh, by the way, there are five books in the Old Testament under the category. So you have the law, and then you have the prophets, right? And then you have what's known as the wisdom literature. Anybody want to take a stab at what five books make up the wisdom literature? One of them we're studying. Anybody want to take a stab at it? In the Old Testament? Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon, Job, and one more. Did you say Psalms?
Yeah.
Okay, you said that. All right. So that's it. And when you read Proverbs and Ecclesiastes, you get a lot of the same flavor. But basically, if you look, and Psalms is not exclusively, wouldn't be exclusively that, but that's just what it's grouped into. So they are called in Proverbs 22:17, they are called the words of the wise. Now, unfortunately, we don't really have a category in our culture for this. But in the ancient Near East, you would have, and other cultures today, you would have a sage, right? Someone who is wise, older, got a large wealth of wisdom that can be passed on. So these also are called the words of the wise in verse 17. And then there's one last title used in chapter 30, verse 1, the words of Agur, son of Jekah, Yakeh, however you want to say it, the oracle. And then if you flip over to the next chapter, chapter 31, the words of King Lemuel, an oracle that his mother taught him. So let me just read this to you. Agur's words in Proverbs 30 verse 1 are a heavy burden laid upon reason. This speech is mainly a rebuke, hence it's described as a burden. So another word for oracle. Lemuel's word in Proverbs 31 1 likewise is a burden in which his mother corrected him. So if you think about an oracle in this context, it is the idea of a burden, but really a corrective burden. And we know that Proverbs has this nature to it. It is corrective to many things, right? Namely foolishness, right? That would be one major category that it is corrective toward. But there are at least seven major sections to the book, and that depends on how you break it up. If you look at chapter 1, I listed these for you. I did, yes, in your outline. But in chapter 1, the first seven verses, some believe that this is an introduction to chapters 1 through 9, and some believe that it's an introduction to the entire book of Proverbs, that's what I take it as. So in this sense, Solomon, I remember 3,000 so Proverbs, and then there's a collection of them that have been put together. Solomon put this as an introduction to the course on wisdom. That's what I believe. And we're going to look at that in just a little bit. It would be known as a prologue. Derek Kidner, who wrote this little commentary, breaks this down into three portions, this opening section. The title would be verse 1, the introduction, verses 2 through 6, and then the motto, verse 7. So that's why we're going to have next week the topic of the fear of the Lord. It really is the precursor to the whole book. And it's a precursor to finding wisdom at all. At least as God sees it, is the fear of the Lord. Major, major subject. So we'll look into that. As a matter of fact, this is so important for raising children, is that this is the primary component before anything is going to click as far as their relationship before God is the fear of the Lord. So, the major sections, the introduction, which I've used as a whole separate one, so that makes 8 sections. Introduction, chapter 1, verses 1 through 7. And then a father's wisdom imparted to a son. It's very clear. 18 times in that opening 9 chapters, he says, my son, my son, my son, my son. And it's an ongoing dialogue, as you will, over those 9 chapters. And then the Proverbs of Solomon. So these will be individual Proverbs. Chapter 10, verse 1 through 22, verse 16. And then the words of the wise, 22, 17 through 24, 22. The sayings of the wise, and all of those, the starting verse is what marks it off as a new section. You'll see a phrase in there that actually says the sayings of the wise. Then the words of Agur in chapter 30, verses 1 through 33. And then the whole chapter, the next 9 verses of chapter 31 is the words of King Lemuel. And then what I titled the Able Helper. You can't see that necessarily in the English, but I believe that's what the Hebrew draws out. And it's an acrostic. That's how we know this is a whole other section. So what's an acrostic? Psalm 119 is an acrostic. Every 8 verses begins, and you can actually see it. Flip over to Psalm 119. You can't see it in Proverbs 31 in the English, but on Psalm 119, every letter of the Hebrew alphabet is used to introduce each new stanza. So, Psalm 119, the first one is Aleph. The second one is Beth, Gimel, Daleth. Hey, wow, and my dear wife is having memories way back to seminary when she would help me learn the Hebrew alphabet. But that's an acrostic. And so the same thing happens in Proverbs 31 where each, and this is amazing. So think about this. If you and I were to write, a lesson, okay, a Sunday school lesson, and we're going to have 22 points. Now think about the creativity that every single first word of the sentence has to start out with a word that fits the context, but alphabetically. So, apples are red. That doesn't make any sense if I'm going to use that in a Sunday school lesson. But if I'm trying to teach a very important truth, and every single verse, and then this one on the Able Helper, is introduced by the first letter of the word being in alphabetical order, and yet making sense. So it's a beautiful, beautiful arrangement. That's a side note. The Able Helper. I don't even know how much we'll get into that. You ladies are like, yay! Okay, its final compilation, the book of Proverbs, was probably around the time of Hezekiah, more than 200 years later. Now, you can see that from, where is it, chapter 25, verse 1. These also are Proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah, copied. So you have an ongoing compilation of the book of Proverbs. Mostly, the first 29 chapters are mostly Solomon's own proverbial statements that are recorded. And so they're compiled finally, I think, somewhere around then. There's a lot of debate on that, but that's okay. And then chapter 30, Agur, and 31, King Lemuel. We have no idea who they are, where they were in the timeline of Israel's history, nor the location within the nation of Israel. So they're just unknown. But here's the question. How did we get to need the book of Proverbs? And this is where, for all of us, it's immediately important. How did we get to need the book of Proverbs? Look at Jeremiah 17. I think this is a crucial component for us. Now, the first verse in here that I'm going to have you look at is probably familiar to you. Jeremiah chapter 17, verse 9. I think this provides tremendous insight into the question, how did we get to need the book of Proverbs? Look at verse 9. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately sick. So that's the first component. So my heart, which I know to be true, is deceitful. And I watch this play out in my children's lives as I try to talk to them about issues of whatever. And you just realize, you're not seeing it, are you? Well, the reason they're not seeing it, no matter how clear you think it is or try to explain it, and everybody else sees it, is because within them, each person, our own hearts are deceitful, and they deceive us. They deceive us about what's true. They deceive us about behavior. They deceive us about our own blind spots, right? Our hearts do that. And then the question comes, who in the world can figure it out? The heart. Who can figure out? Who can understand? Who can know it? Now, the second verse, which maybe you're not quite as familiar in attaching these two together, is so important. I, the Lord, search the heart and test the mind. Which is to say, I can figure it out. I see it perfectly. I see it very clearly. To give every man according to his ways, according to the fruit of his deeds. So when we think about how did we get to need the book of Proverbs? First of all, there's a problem. We have a broken heart. We have a broken heart, every one of us. We have a broken heart. And we live in a world cursed and filled with broken hearts. Now that's a bad situation, right? If we live in a cursed world and there's a whole bunch of broken hearts trying to live together, it's going to create chaos and difficulty, right? But the solution, so that's the problem, the solution is biblical revelation. If there's going to be any solution to this deceitful heart and not knowing how to understand it, it has to come from outside of us. It has to come from God Himself. And that revelation centers and culminates in the one, I'm going to quote for you, Colossians 2:3, in whom are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. Okay? So I'm going to put two things up here. First of all, where is the book of Proverbs in Old Testament history? And where is it for us? So, I should have left that there. You have the law given, right? Long, long before the time period of Solomon. Which is a reflection of God's character. You have a people that have been delivered through the Exodus. They have become God's people. They have been given the law, not as a means to gain God's acceptance, but because they were delivered, they have been given a law which says, this is how you're going to lift up my name before the world. And it's going to set you apart, and you're going to look very distinct from the nations around you. And then you have the kind of the in-between, the nitty-gritty ways of trying to live together. And so you have the book of Proverbs, you have Ecclesiastes, you have Song of Solomon, you have Job, and portions of Psalms. Yes, that does say Proverbs. Which sheds light on this living out. Now, fast forward. We are in Christ. We have the law of Christ. And within that law is a structure of what it looks like now to lift up God's name before the nations as believers. But this book is still extremely helpful in allowing us insight into figuring out what this looks like. Not only to live amongst each other, but to live amongst the world and to look within our hearts and to find out our own character, huge character deficiencies that we have that we need to grow in. And yet, when we look this way, when we look at Christ, we really do see all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. It's amazing when you look at the Gospels and you see how He interacts with people. And this common thing would be said, where did He get this wisdom? Right? And He would say things when the most difficult questions were asked. And He would answer it and they would just go away silent. Where did He get that wisdom? Well, he is the embodiment of wisdom. You can see that the Proverbs, when you just circle the whole wagon of the book of Proverbs and you realize he just had it. He had it. All the little intricacies, the nuances in the book of Proverbs, he had it. He had it in him. So that in any given situation, nobody could best him. Just couldn't. He was the absolute pinnacle of wisdom. So, we look to Christ for our standing, and we look to him as our example as well, to see this fleshed out. Okay, so let's look at Proverbs is primarily about gaining wisdom for existence as a human in a fallen world. That's what the book is about. It's about living life in a skillful manner. If you say, what does it mean to have wisdom in life? It is to be able to live life in such a way that you can look at that person and say, wow, he or she is skilled at it. Now, obviously, when we look across the landscape of our culture right now, we see people who are skilled at business. We see people who are skilled at abilities in certain areas. But those same people, if you were to bring them in the home and you go, ooh, I don't think you're real skilled at family, at relationships. Right? So, we think of our best politicians, right? They're not skilled with their tongue. They're always constantly getting themselves into trouble with their tongue. Proverbs answers that. It is about obtaining the skills necessary for navigating a world full of broken people, of whom I'm part of the problem, right? I am the broken person causing problems in my home, in my spheres, in my neighborhood, in this church. So it's about navigating that. It is timeless and it crosses all cultures, offering insight in divine dealings, human behavior, and the fallen human heart that shapes our behavior. And in its breadth, it covers the highest order of the ruling of the king to parental guidance of children, from the work ethic of the slave to the generosity of the rich. Let me just read you one. This is a longer quote by Derek Kidner, just to kind of whet your appetite. Now notice this. This is a proverbial statement that he starts his quote out with. Make the bad people good and the good people nice. Make the bad people good and the good people nice. So the first one's kind of obvious. The second one, the good people, they're kind of mean, right? So this is, it's supposed to have been a child's prayer, but it makes the point with proverbic brevity that there are details of character small enough to escape the mesh of the law and the broadsides of the prophets, and yet so decisive in personal dealings. Proverbs moves in this realm, asking what a person is like to live with or to employ, how he manages his affairs, his time, and himself. This good lady, for instance, does she talk too much? Or this cheerful soul, is he bearable in the early morning? Or, and this friend who's always dropping in, here's some advice for him. And for that rather aimless lad. So you see how it just kind of, the nuances of the scheme of life. But it is not a portrait album or a book of manners. It offers a key to life. The samples of behavior which it holds up to view are all assessed by one criterion, which could be summed up in the question, is this wisdom or folly? This is a unifying approach to life because it suits the most commonplace realms as fully as the most exalted. Wisdom leaves its signature on anything well made or well judged, from an apt remark to the universe itself, from a shrewd policy, which springs from practical insight, to a noble action, which presupposes moral and spiritual discernment. In other words, it is equally at home in the realms of nature and art, of ethics and politics, to mention no others, and forms a single basis of judgment for them all. Such an approach could have the effect of lowering everything to a common level if wisdom were equated with selfish calculation. There is calculation in Proverbs, for there is every encouragement to count the cost or reward of one's actions and to study the ways of getting things done. But wisdom, as taught here, is God-centered. And even when it is most down to earth, it consists in the shrewd and sound handling of one's affairs in God's world, in submission to His will. So that's a summary statement of the book of Proverbs. It's interesting, if you look at Proverbs chapter 1, verse 3, wisdom, which is going to be the theme here of the book of Proverbs, wisdom is clearly said to be from God. That is, the book of the Proverbs are to receive instruction in wise dealing. We know this is inspired by God, so we understand that wisdom is given by God. But do you remember back in Genesis chapter 3, verse 6, when the serpent is tempting Eve and he's in this dialogue with her? Remember, one of the components was that this will make you wise. Right? This will make you wise. Up until then, she had seen wisdom, independence, underneath God's revelation. So anything I have in relationship to my world around me, my existence, my familial relationship, our role on this planet, was based on what God had revealed. Now there's a temptation to come on the outside and to gain a new form of wisdom. Bad choice. But wisdom is granted from God. And so the only way back is under revelation, is sitting under the divine tutelage of the book of Proverbs. Now, by contrast, in the book of Genesis, the last portrait that we see is Joseph. Pretty interesting, huh? Who is the living image of the wise man of Proverbs. That is, through discipline, modesty, knowledge, self-mastery, and the fear of God. All of those components, Genesis 42, verse 18, had given a noble form to his whole being. Before Pharaoh, he proves himself a shrewd counselor, and finally, the one who covered up all sins with love. Proverbs 10, 12. But what is the first principle of wisdom? It is the fear of the Lord. Verse 7. That's the first principle of wisdom. And as a matter of fact, you see that in Proverbs 1:7, but then flip over to Proverbs 9:10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Notice that? Remember how I told you that chapters 1 through 9 was a unit? So here we have 1:7 and 9:10. These are bookends to say the same thing. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. One last quote from Kidner. Nor finally should we stop with the old covenant. A greater than Solomon was to come, choosing to teach in the forms and rhythms of the wise, and carrying their proverb to its ultimate perfection in his parables. As for his person, while the New Testament took up the language of the law and the prophets to describe his office among his people as prophet, priest, and king, it turned to proverbs and to the thought forms of the wise for terms to express his relation to the universe and his oneness with the Father. As the one in whom all things were created and consist, in whom lie all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge, Christ, in fact, as the wisdom of God. So, as New Testament believers, if we look at this, what is our lot in life? We have been saved, we have been justified, we have been forgiven of our sins, we have been declared to be righteous and made children of God. Someday, in the future, we will be glorified with Christ. We will be made totally like Him. We will see Him. We will be like Him because we'll see Him as He is. What is this period right here called until that happens? From here to here in glory. That's supposed to be a crown. What is that time period right there called? Justification, glorification, what's in between? Sanctification. What does sanctification mean? Ah, that's it. Becoming more like Christ. So, that's all the book of Proverbs is in wisdom. Becoming more like Christ. And we can see how this is a crucial component of our growth is having the book of... I told you how when I was about 22, I really started digging into the book of Proverbs. But I'll go ahead and tell you why. What prompted that is because when I came to Master's College, there was a young lady that I was just absolutely certain that I was going to marry. She was not sitting on this front row, which means I did not marry her. But I was in a relationship with her for about a year and went all the way up to Spokane, Washington. Her father was an elder in the church up there. And so I was there for the summer working. And at the end of that time period, he said, I'm going to have to tell you that you need to stop seeing my daughter. And there could not have been a bigger blow to my pride than that. And I just realized, and he told me why. There were some character issues he saw in me. And I just thought, wow, that's probably the last thing I ever thought that I would hear from someone. This was a man I respected, and I respected the entire church. As a matter of fact, the church that I was at then was the church that Chris Mueller was pastoring. We were at Exalting Christ last, and he was teaching out there. So anyway, that's my history of Chris Mueller. But nonetheless, after I got done with that, and I was with one of the pastors at Grace Community Church, and he actually taught the book of Proverbs at the Master's College at the time. And so I realized I really need to get the book of Proverbs in my soul, because it addresses all of these character issues that lead to wisdom, living life in a skillful manner. And I could wholeheartedly say after that, with my tail between my legs, I'm not living life in a skillful manner right now. I need help. And so that's what started my journey in the book of Proverbs. So with that, let's look at the first seven verses to set the stage. And this is an extremely important portion to looking at the book of Proverbs because of all that it says. So we're going to call this a prologue. And a prologue is a what?
What's a prologue?
Who's the novelist in here? What's a prologue? Okay, fine. Who said what? Okay, the beginning. Pro. Before. Log. From logos. Word. So the word before. And it is an introduction. It would be introductory matters. The word before that's going to set the path for the entire work that is recorded here. Now, what I want you to notice right off the bat is the primacy of wisdom that's displayed in the book of Proverbs. I just want you to look at the verses I call out and find these words as I say them. Chapter 1, verse 2. To know, wisdom, instruction, to understand, insight. Verse 3, instruction, to be prudent. Verse 4, prudence, knowledge, discretion. Verse 5, wise, learning, the one who understands, guidance. Verse 6, to understand. That is to say, Solomon has piled these terms up to put the book of Proverbs in its context. And it identifies, verse 1, identifies the primary author of the book of Proverbs, Solomon, the son of David, the king of Israel. Now notice that. Well, it does two things. First of all, it tells us who, and the fact that he's the one that wrote it. Do you know that honestly, a lot of scholars who write commentaries, you'll begin a verse like this, and there will be page after page after page of debate as to who wrote this. Amazing. And there's one word that needs to be said right there, and that is unbelief, which has dominated the secular view of the Bible for the last two centuries. But nonetheless, we'll just take it at face value. It's very clear, Solomon, son of David, the king of Israel. But there are two things noted here. So this wisdom that's been given is from Solomon, and he wrote in the form of Proverbs. Solomon was the apex of success in Israel's history. David is the great king, and then after him, Solomon lives at the height of all its glory, so much so that the wealth that he had, he said, was so great that silver was like stones. You just kick them around. They had so much of it. It basically reduced the value of silver by the other things that he had of value. And his wisdom is unparalleled. You can see that in the book of Ecclesiastes and in 1 Kings as well. the Queen of Sheba came because she'd heard stories about Solomon's wisdom. And when she came to Solomon and presented question after question, the biggest questions that could be posed from a world situation, and she said this, not even the half of it had been told. So great is your wisdom. Now this was given by God. We read that it was given as a gift, an anointing from the Spirit, such an abundance of wisdom. He asked for wisdom. When he was asked, ask anything. And he said, I want wisdom to lead such a great people. And God said, fine, I'll give you a double portion of it. So, he had tremendous wisdom by the Spirit of God, and he wrote in the form of Proverbs. But the other note here is that the king is the highest form of human leadership. And we don't have a king in our country. We have a president that might come close to that. But in a monarchy, there's no higher form of leadership than the king. But it would behoove every political leader to own the book of Proverbs. Can you imagine what would take place if our presidents and our governors had mastered the book of Proverbs? Think about that. What is foolish? What is wise? How to manage my tongue? How to deal out justice? We have all kinds of talk about justice. But Proverbs presents a very clear picture of what justice is. How to deal with family matters. All kinds of things. How to handle, and for us as well, how do you handle yourself in the presence of the king? Put a knife to your throat. If certain things are there, Proverbs would say. But Proverbs was a carefully compiled book of axioms or timeless truths, which likely were originally used as an instruction manual for young men who would be in some affiliation with the kingly sphere, so the court or whatever. But that's most likely what its original use was within the nation of Israel. However, given the timeless nature of these truths and the fact that they are divinely inspired, they serve as wisdom for all people of all ages who desire to skillfully reflect the glory of God in daily living. That's all we're talking about. How do I skillfully reflect the glory of God in day-to-day living, in all the circumstances that can come at me? That's what this book's about. Now, we did look at, just briefly, and I want to touch it for a second, a very important truth regarding in regard to the king embodying the book of Proverbs. So, when you look at this, and noting the fact that Solomon wrote this, most of it, and it was a leadership manual, the king should, as the head of the nation, as the leader of the nation, should embody the book of Proverbs. Now, the sad reality is that Solomon, because of 1:7, which is the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, because Solomon turned away from that by his many marriages and the idolatries that went along with it, because he turned away from that, we read in the book of Ecclesiastes the devastating things, and we read in the historical narrative in 1 Kings, the devastating things that happened because Solomon turned away from the fear of the Lord. He could not practice the wisdom that he said. Tragic, tragic thing. That's why it's so important for that. Jesus, on the other hand, as the king, without fail, embodied this. And regardless if I finish the rest of it or not, I want to look at this real quickly. Isaiah 9, verse 6. The prophecy was this, for to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, King. And his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor. How do you become the Wonderful Counselor? Unless you embody this. Flip over two chapters to chapter 11. There shall come forth a shoot from the stump of Jesse. Kingly language, that's what that is, David, David's line. And a branch from his roots shall bear fruit. And notice this, the Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. And his delight shall be in the fear of the Lord. He shall not judge as a king, talking about justice. He shall not judge by what his eye sees or decide disputes by what his ear hears. How shall he judge? But with righteousness as an intrinsic quality, he shall judge the poor and decide with equity for the meek of the earth. And he shall strike the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips shall he shall kill the wicked. Righteousness shall be the belt of his waist, and faithfulness the belt of his loins. One more passage in chapter 42, prophesying the coming of the Messiah. Verse 1, Behold my servant whom I uphold, my chosen, in whom my soul delights. I have put my spirit upon him. He will bring forth justice to the nations. Again, the king. He will not cry aloud or lift up his voice or make it heard in the street. A bruised weed, so the lowest, he will not break, and a faintly burning wick he will not quench. He will faithfully bring forth justice. He will not grow faint or be discouraged till he has established justice in the earth, and the coastlands wait for his law. Now, I don't have time to go into it, but when you look in the Gospels, like I said, you see this played out again and again and again. And then we have that magnificent statement in Colossians 2:3, where he really is the whole treasure of wisdom and knowledge. So, the king is the highest form of human leadership, and this embodiment was seen in its clearest form in Jesus. But, also, verse 1, under the inspiration of the Spirit of God, I'm back in Proverbs 1 now, under the inspiration of the Spirit of God, Solomon records these proverbs for us as well. Now, a proverb is a riddle. It's an enigmatic statement that requires interpretation. And it's designed to require thought. So part of the intention, and skipping ahead, verse 6, Proverbs 1, verse 6, part of the intended purpose of writing proverbs was to make you and I think. Alright? So that whenever we come up with a solution to the riddle, it sticks with us. That's part of the purpose. It's to introduce the reader to a style of teaching that provokes his thought. I'm quoting from Kidner right now. Getting under his skin by thrusts of wit, paradox, common sense, and teasing symbolism, in preference to the preacher's tactic of frontal assault. So it's like a backdoor approach into our minds to get us to work through the riddle so that it goes, oh, I got it. And then it sticks with us. And that was its design. Okay, in verses 2 through 6, which I just gave away, one of the purposes of the book of Proverbs. What are the purposes? There are actually 7 that are stated here. So when I look at this in the Hebrew, there are 7 different purpose statements given here. But the first 6 are in verses 2 through 4, which build a cumulative, exhaustive, and all-encompassing list of purposes to articulate the breadth of wisdom and understanding and insight. But it's to give the picture of what it looks like to possess complete life skills for every conceivable situation. That's the point behind it. Why the book of Proverbs? To give us, to equip us with a list, an entire body of life skills for every possible situation. Now, obviously, when we look at all the Proverbs, I don't think anybody in here would say, you know, I got every single one of them memorized and I understand every single one of them. And I just, it's like every day, just constantly in and out of them. So this is an ongoing pursuit for us. No matter where we are in the book of Proverbs, is that we would be continuing to try to understand and apply them. Because I can't tell you how many times it'll come into my mind as I'm sitting there, maybe not handling a situation well, and the Proverbs are starting to rattle into my brain. I'm going, you know, that's stupid, Travis. You really need to just knock it off. You know what's going to happen on this. Maybe it's with my kid, and I'm trying to manipulate the child to do what I know he ought to do, but I'm moving into an area that I start hearing a proverb in my mind. Ugh. Or I get a really big desire to do something, and man, I'm a gung-ho, and I'm ready to go, and I'm hearing Proverbs 19:2, he who makes haste with his feet errs.
you need to slow down, right? Which, by the way, that was what finally led me to my wife. Is that verse was rattling in my head, and I said, "You gotta stop, and you gotta think, you gotta stop." So the last purpose is really two purpose statements using four synonyms, and that's what we just looked at. But notice how he said it: a proverb, a saying, words of the wise, and riddles. And then he gives the verb in there, to understand. So the goal is not knowing proverbs. We can quote, train up a child in the way he should go, when he's old he won't depart from it. By the way, there are two very real possible interpretations of that proverb. What's the most common?
Promise that he's going to follow because
he's dreaming that. Okay, Janelle just mentioned a word, a very important word. The first word was promise, which let me just clarify. Thank you, Janelle, because that's a very important component. Proverbs, if taken as promises, can become problematic for us. If taken as promises, like if you do this, it's an absolute. Proverbs is in the category of wisdom. They're principle oriented. Some of them, because they're so contextually driven, we would need to understand the context of it, or it wouldn't even fit us talking about history. But so that's think more of proverbs as principles, right? Because some people might go, you know, it was a promise. If I did this, then this would happen. Not in its absolute sense. This is a general observation which is given to us. And we'll get into that more as we go along. But the question was, the promise, what would you say?
The raise your child is going to follow in that way.
Okay. If this, then this. We know that's it, but what's the if and what's the this? If you raise up a child in the way he should go, that is according to, let's just take the biblical revelation here, then when he's old, he won't depart from it. Did you know that there's another equally valid interpretation of that? If you, because it literally says this, if you train up a child according to his way, when he's old, he won't depart from it. So it just really depends on, is that the way he ought to go, or is it the way his bent is? And is it talking about a moral inclination, or is it talking about general skill? Like if you train him up according to his bent, like he's bent to be an engineer, and he'll turn out to be a great engineer. If you train up a child according to his way, if you have a little baby, and you pamper that baby, and you just, yes, okay, whatever, yes, okay, whatever, yes, okay, whatever, when he's old, guess what? He's still going to be a baby. Just a whole lot bigger one. Right? So, now we're... So, if you train up a child according, he or she, to his way, his natural bent of selfishness, when he's old, he's still going to still be like that. And both of those from the book of Proverbs could be warranted, because we know that that Proverbs brings in the rod and correction to steer away from foolishness, which is all tied up in the child's heart. And if you don't use these means, God says that foolishness will not be driven out of that heart. And when they're older, they will be consumed with foolishness. Maybe they can cover it up and be real slick about it. But nonetheless. Or does it mean train up a child according to the way he ought to go? And when he's old, he won't depart in it. We know there are many, many children who have grown up, known the right things, and then turned away from it. For the past 20 years, I've been more inclined to think it was the second one. Throw me under the bus if you want. In other words, I think that if you train up a child stuck to his own ways and don't really pursue intervening and redirecting that foolishness is going to remain. And our world is filled with characters today whose father was not involved, and those young men are still, but much greater capacity, doing foolish things. Because it was never... I tell my kids that all the time. Our world is filled with men whose fathers never directed this out of them. And someday, hopefully, you'll look back and be thankful. Okay, so, to understand, that's what it was, to understand a proverb. So, one purpose of the proverbial style of writing is to make the reader stop and think about a riddle to determine its meaning. There's a purpose. And you say, well, I look at some of these and I can't figure them out. That's intended to be that way. So that we stop and think and pray and work through it. And a lot of them, it's a riddle, but it's not like some hidden dark riddle. It just requires us to ponder it a little bit and it'll just pop on us. And, oh, that's what he's getting at. Or, there's obviously commentary help as well. But to drive home the point and to encourage remembrance. But now notice in verse 5 the plea that is seen here. Let the wise hear and increase in learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance. That's one translation. You'll see, I think the New American Standard says, the wise will hear and increase in learning. The one who understands will obtain guidance. Either way, it's appropriate. But just that submitting oneself to Proverbs is the key to truly being wise and understanding. And this is where it's hard. Is that we have to take this and go, okay, God, this is how you've said that I can be helped. And so I'm going to submit myself to this. I'm going to submit myself to knowing the book of Proverbs. That is, gaining, it is the way to gain divine street smarts, which comes through submitting our lives to the tutelage of the book of Proverbs. So, when I think of street smarts, I grew up in Alabama in the more rural components of, although there was a town nearby of Alabama, and I was a lot. It's interesting, Jeremy and I had a lot of conversations on this at the T4G conference because of all the stuff that's gone on in the eastern half of the country with racial tension stuff more recently. But I grew up in the heart of that. But because my parents didn't pass it on to me, I was really oblivious to a lot of that stuff. And so I had an African-American man on my track team who was living with me, and I grew up in an all-white town. They had KKK marches still on Saturday mornings, and but I was still oblivious to all this. But we were in Jackson, Mississippi at a track meet once, and he and I went out for a run to kind of warm up before a race, and we were running through this neighborhood, and I'm just totally oblivious. And he says, hey, Travis, you might want to stay next to me right now. Stay over here close to me, because I was kind of running on the other side. And I said, why? And he said, just trust me. And later he told me that it was a bad neighborhood and it was an all-black neighborhood. I didn't think the first thing about it. Just clueless. But because he had better street smarts enough to say, I know what's going on here. You must stay close to me. But that's what we're talking about. Just street smarts, but divine street smarts for life. So that we can look at those around us and say, you might want to come over here because this is what's going on in this sphere. And it helps us with our kids, too, with a lot of things. You say, you know, I mean, first there's my own history that I've learned from, but then there's a whole other umbrella that goes beyond what I've experienced. And to be able to weigh into people's decisions, our children, those around us, new believers, pastors, elders have to have this component, wisdom. So, the question is, will we? There's the plea, verse 5. But will we? Will we submit our lives to the scrutiny of this large umbrella approach to wisdom? Now look at verse 7. The key to wisdom. The fear of the Lord is the starting place of knowledge. That's the positive. And this is typical of Proverbs. Look at the other half. Fools despise this. Wisdom and instruction. So we see this played out very overtly in children. When the parent who knows that this is the way it needs to go, this is the path of blessing, just all kinds of things, right? And we try to present it, and they're going the other direction, not seeing it one bit whatsoever. Don't care, don't need it. Dad, you're out to lunch. You're going, I know I did this when I was a kid, but really, does this never change? You know, does every single generation do? Yeah, they do. But when we look at that and you go, that's what I hear right there. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. You realize that's in the human heart. That's why I believe that it's the number one topic in the book of Proverbs. Everybody is a fool. It's a matter of where and to what degree and whether the Spirit of God is redirecting that foolishness. And that's where I was at 22 years old. Sadly to say, really this was written to someone about 14. And so, but it doesn't matter. Better late than never to get a hold of them. Will we submit to this? The fear of the Lord becomes the precondition to true wisdom and it beckons an entire lesson. And that's why we're going to spend next week looking at this to address it properly. But suffice it to say that Solomon included it in his introductory prologue to prepare the reader for the whole of the wisdom of Proverbs. And it is the key ingredient to obtaining the previous verses. So all of those piled up terms of wisdom and discretion and understanding and wise dealing and insight, prudence, being prudent, knowledge, all of those components, learning, guidance, were so necessary. First step is the fear of the Lord. And so we're going to look at that next time. And I left no room for questions. That's how you avoid any difficult issues. So let me pray, and then if you have any questions, you can talk to me about it. Father, thank you for your word. I do pray that you would enrich all of us as we embark upon this study, that you would help us to grow. And even as we look at our own hearts in the past, things that we've said, things we've done, things we thought, patterns of behavior, patterns of thinking, that you would mold us into the image of Christ who truly embodied this in every way, in every context. Every period of his life, you said, you recorded that he grew in wisdom. And that's what we want to do. And we just ask that you be merciful to our children as well and those around us. And that you would help us as we grow in this to be conduits of this wisdom for the glory of Christ and for our own good. In Jesus' name, amen.